Wimps in the tunnel. He's wearing the last section of the show.
The atmosphere.
The atmosphere is electric.
In the East Stand.
Roar for Roar. The Tyler Stone Podcast.
For the Royals.
That's probably the open.
That's good. I like it. DJ Megapod.
Five wins in six, one defeat in nine, and back-to-back wins over championship contenders. Is this a Reading team bound for glory, or one that's going to break our hearts? We'll ask our panel if we're heading back to the Premier League while looking at whether this is the most competitive squad of all time. Plus, in pub chat, it's time to look at our own Reading power rankings. Hello and welcome to the Tyler Stone Podcast episode 70, in what is possibly one of the most upbeat shows you'll hear in a long time. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of TylerStone.com, and I'd like to be joined by Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy.
Hello, Wim. Hello, listeners. How are you?
I'd wait for them to respond.
Well, yeah, they obviously make it a bit more interactive tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just give it a few hours and see which one of them record the rest of it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Mr. Dave Harris, Handbags Harris, has joined us as well. Dave, hello.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm all right. Not bad. Where's Johnny this evening?
He's on a trip. He's on a little holiday with his missus.
Some Mickey Mouse organisation he's gone to, has he?
Yeah, he's gone to Disneyland.
Oh, there we go.
So, yeah.
That one went up, was it?
Not at all. So he's not here next week, or this week even. We're not here next week, so it's the international break. So we're going to pack as much as we can into this show. It's our 70th show. Can't believe it. All 70 slipped by.
Is Johnny already spending his winnings from Reading winning the championship?
I would like to think so. I've lumped more money on. As soon as I got back in the car, stuck another £20 on Reading to win the league, 11-1.
Well, he had a nice little win at the weekend, didn't he, with Golden Horn and the Prix de Luck.
Yeah, yeah.
That's spent in a French bar somewhere.
Has he been winning money again?
Yeah. What? Yeah, the thing is, Johnny's one of these, same with every gambler. It's like you see on Facebook, these ridiculous accumulators. No one ever posts their losing bet slips, do they?
No, of course not.
Unless they're like one-off. Otherwise, that's the countless money that goes down the drain. Don't see many rich gamblers.
Well, no, you don't in general, but you only have to have one big win. Gambler away.
Yeah, gambler away. That's about five gambler wares in. And on that very note, just before we move on to recapping, I'd like to thank everybody who nominated us for a football blogging award. Unfortunately, the podcast didn't make it, but the website did.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, the website got through under the most established blog category. I think we're up against about another seven or eight blogs. If you go onto the TylerStone.com, you can find out how to vote. There are two ways we can win. Either the judges nominate us to win or through fan voting. So literally, if you are listening to this, you have the power to let us win. So we're organising a jaunt up to Manchester. It's being held at the Football Hotel, you know, the one that Giggs and Neville etc. set up.
Oh, lovely.
Near Old Trafford. So yeah, we'll all go out there and we'll try to put in an unprofessional joke of an appearance to live up to our name. But no, thank you very much. And again, if you do have the time to vote for us in the next round, that'll be fantastic. Head over to the website. But in the meantime, let's talk about one of the best wins we've seen in the Medeski for a long time.
View from the Tarhurst End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
Reading 2, Middlesbrough 0. Middlesbrough coming to the Medeski in second place in the league. Reading went into the game 4, so it's a massive game, gents. And for Reading to come out 2-0 winners in relatively comfortable fashion, I think it's fair to say there was a couple of nervy moments, but one shot on target for Middlesbrough in the entire game, a team that were free scoring. I think they were the Championship's highest goal scorers or there or thereabouts coming into the game. Clean sheet, two goals. Could you ask for any more?
No, you couldn't ask for any more. And I was very impressed with Middlesbrough on the ball. They look a very good side, but they didn't really hurt us, did they, the whole match? I think the free kick you're alluding to, how Absey saved, was probably the only shot that looked like it was going to trouble us. But other than that, I thought Reading, without playing brilliantly well, were more than comfortable throughout the match.
Yeah, pretty much that. It was noticeable that Karanka, he changed his lineup from the comfortable win they had against Leeds, where they had two shots on goal and scored three times. David Nugent didn't start the game. In fact, didn't even play at all. Albert Adoma was also on the bench. So he's obviously set up to counteract whatever we were planning on doing. And within 15 seconds, bye-bye to that game plan.
Yeah, the third quickest goal ever scored by Reading, apparently, behind David White and Jimmy Kebbe. I thought it was 16 seconds, but apparently it's come out 15. Mark White, sorry, not David White. Who's David White used to play for? Leeds?
Leeds, Man City.
Oh, that's it. Did he score against Reading once?
Probably.
in that cup match.
In a League Cup match. He might have done in that one as well, but he also played. He definitely scored in 93-94 League Cup up at Main Road when they had a crowd boycott. 9,000 there.
Doesn't take us much to get off track here. It doesn't take me very long to get a name wrong. So
some random name picked out a name.
And I wonder why we haven't got nominated in the podcast category.
At least it mixes it up nicely.
Indeed, yeah, absolutely. Well, as I said, third quickest goal ever. And Dave, you seem to think, which is right, Danny Williams' first goal at Medeski as well.
First goal at the Medeski, yeah. Said it at the time. And yes, I'm proven correct.
Okay. Created by one Hal Robson-Kanu.
Yeah, and again, I thought he had a very good game on Saturday. I thought he'd done very well, Hal Robson-Kanu. It pains me to say that, but he did play very well.
He did, indeed. It's noticeable that when Vidra doesn't play, we're not as pingy, I think is the word we could probably use, around the box. There's much more direct, much more attritional style of play, which suits Hal Robson-Kanu down at the ground. But one thing you can say for Robson-Kanu is that when you do get him in the right area, and he can really, really whip in a fantastic cross. And he's done exactly that.
That was a great cross as well. Danny Williams had to do was continue his run. And that's exactly what he'd done. And the keeper had no chance from that sort of range.
In that clichéd corridor of uncertainty.
Absolutely.
And he's right in a position to nod home. So, you know, Williams gets us on the board early. And that really suits Reading. Because we all know that they're much more suited to counter-attacking football.
Well, we spoke, didn't we? I said this week, I haven't seen Reading break a team down for a long time when they've come and sat in. And once you score that early, the teams can't sit in anymore. And that suited us, like you said, perfectly.
Yeah, it wasn't the best viewing for the next 20 minutes, Dave. I don't think Reading touched the ball. And if they did, it certainly wasn't in the Middlesbrough half. Because they were pinging it around quite nicely without being overly threatening.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? They didn't create anything. I'm quite happy to have that.
Brendan Rodgers style football.
Yeah, I thought they were very good on the ball, Middlesbrough, again, without really hurting us.
Yeah.
But that's testament to how good we are defensively at the moment, I think.
I do wonder what would have happened, though, if they had played David Nugent. They didn't have that Duracell bunny running around after the ball like a dog chasing a stick. So I think I do wonder what would have happened if they'd have played him, but they didn't. So it made me nice and happy, really. Yeah.
More fooled, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, the big news going into the game is obviously Ali Alhabsi replacing Jonathan Bond, who's out for 2 to 4 weeks with injury. I think I wasn't the only person who had a bit of a face palm when I saw that team out, especially because the last time I'd seen Alhabsi, it was costing us the game against Everton. But credit to him, he had one save to make, as we mentioned, from a free kick. Made it well, palmed it away. And also, just did some of the basic things well. There was one slightly iffy clearance, but beyond that, his kicking was fine, his throw-in was good, and he claimed a number of decent crosses as well. So really, I think that was the Alhabsi I thought we were getting at the start of the season. It's nice to see that keeper does still exist.
Yeah, he was very solid. But always, whenever you've got a keeper that people are uncertain of, it always makes me laugh, the crowd reaction to when they catch a ball and this massive cheer that goes up. And then you know as your away team that actually we should probably have a few shots on goal here.
Pretty much, yeah. But he didn't really have a great deal to do, did he? What's he claimed? 3 crosses, 4 crosses. He's claimed 1 low down on his near post. He's made 1 save all game from a very well whipped in free kick from Stuart Downing, I think. But he's not really had a lot to do. And it's exactly the same with Jonathan Bond, who's not had a lot to do but made a few howlers. It's a credit to the defence in front of him for restricting... restricting a goalkeeper's workload.
Yeah, there were a few fizzing efforts in the second half that went just past the post. I'd be a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
That perhaps it was nowhere near. But, you know, you can't say that. And it's gone past the post. And when you luck's in, you luck's in. So, you know, credit to him. And he does need that to build up his confidence because he certainly was a very good goalkeeper. He was an established Premier League goalkeeper for a number of years. So it's clear that the physical ability is there. He's not had any massive injuries, to my knowledge, that have diminished him physically. It's very much a mental problem, and sometimes it can take a game like that. You look at a goalkeeper like Adam Federici, who you would have said after those first 3-4 games of the Premier League season, shot to pieces, don't want to see him near Reading team again, and he came back and did really well. So, you know, it's very much a mental game, especially when you're in goal. So hopefully he'll build on this, because it looks like we might have him for a couple more games yet.
Well, to be realistic, I mean, if you can keep putting in performances like that, it'd be very difficult to put Bond back in the side, I'd have thought.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to come on to with the midfield. Again, Oliver Norwood and Danny Williams putting in a great performance despite the absence of Stephen Quinn, and with Tish Bowler on the bench. Alex Vander's not even in the 18. I'm not sure if he was injured or not, but judging by the strength of the bench, I think he might have just been overlooked for this one.
Yeah.
Regardless, he's nowhere near the team. Such competition for places, especially in the middle of the park right now. Is it Norwood and Williams for you, or is it still a case of chopping and changing, depending on the opposition?
Because they are all playing so well. There's not one midfielder at the moment who can say, actually, he's not putting a very good performance there. I mean, Williams I love anyhow, because he will run and run and run until he collapses. And sometimes he lacks a bit of quality, but in general, he will push the side on. Even last year when we were struggling, he did always try to push the side on. And Norwood's certainly been much better this year than he was last. I think he's flourishing under Clark. And the other two, Tish Bowley, when he comes as well, didn't put a foot wrong. He looks big, strong, got a great first touch. So you could pick any one of them four, and I don't think any of them will let you down. And that is a problem that you want, and we haven't had for some time.
No further to add.
Yeah, I thought this was one of Williams's best games I've seen from him in a long time. This is the dynamic Danny Williams at his best, the sort of form we saw in that little purple patch he had at the end of Adkins' first full season.
Yeah, he's got a great drive, Danny Williams, yeah. And he will just keep going and he won't never stop, and I think I admire that in any player.
And it was great, just going back to that goal early on, it was great to see a midfielder in that position, because how often do we say in the past couple of seasons, where's the bodies in the box?
Yeah, get forward. Yeah,
it was great. You watch the video, and I have watched his movement, and it's just literally completely untracked, totally untracked. But as soon as Robson Cano just dropped his shoulder, he was on his bike and he was going. He was straight for it, and he just met it absolutely perfectly. He couldn't really not get it on target from 6 yards out.
It's proper desire. Had proper desire to get forward and score a goal. And I think when you point to the Copples team, whenever you see a Copple side, when the crosses come in, you have four or five players in the box, and it didn't do them any harm. So,
no.
Especially in this league, because it's very difficult to get caught, I think, by most sides.
Very much a sort of goal that you would see a Mr. Stephen Sidwell score.
Yeah, very reminiscent of that.
Very much so. And alongside him, as I mentioned, Oliver Norwood, a player who, like I said, Nick Blackman, that we'll mention in a minute, was out of favour under Steve Clarke. Didn't have a great end to last year. Lost his place to Chalobah and then Ake. But this year he's been absolutely fantastic. I thought not just with his distribution, I thought he was winning some great tackles, starting some moves well, very good on the ball. And again, it's just amazing what confidence can do. And he's one of Reading's best players at the moment. And long may that continue.
Yeah, he's been excellent this year. I mean, I think we pointed last year to him looking a bit weak in the tackle, but he certainly wasn't that against Middlesbrough. He put in everything he had, and they're all doing it for Clark, and I think it's about time they all did.
Yeah, absolutely. The one, just before we come on to Nick Blackman, the one person who slightly underwhelmed me was Lucas Pearson. And this is the problem you get when you get a player who comes to a Premier League club. He's been at a Premier League club since he's young. He's not played in a very physical league very often. He was just weak on the ball.
I thought he was dreadful on the day. I was surprised he came out of the second half, because I was sat with my dad and I said, what do you think of that Chelsea player, man? He goes, he's stinking the place out. I thought he had an absolutely dreadful game.
He wasn't particularly good. No, absolutely, you're right.
Not to say that he will continue to have dreadful games.
No, of course not.
He did look weak. He lost the ball a lot.
You've got to give him a bit of a chance. You've got to give him 7, 8, 9, 10 games to get fully up to speed. Certainly he will have learnt a considerable amount from Saturday's game. Hopefully he can push on and improve, not just be the passenger that he was on Saturday. But again, you know, regardless of that, if we can win as comfortably as we did with a passenger, it speaks volumes about the other 10 players that are playing around him at the moment.
Yeah, I was just surprised that when half-time came with three wingers sat on the bench and Mel Robson-Cowley playing up front, who can play on the wing, I was surprised he'd come back out, but he wasn't out for that long.
Interesting, three Chelsea loanees in that game, Callas, Hector and Pearson. Which of the three do you reckon is most likely to make it? At the moment, probably all of them, because Chelsea are awful.
Yeah.
presumably they get back to their usual levels.
And Hector we've got as well.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah.
Hector. Yeah, I think Hector probably looked the better out of the three.
The way that he's progressed over the last year to 18 months, absolutely. Hector's streaks ahead of either of them.
Even on Saturday, when Hector was out of position or he slipped over, he still won the ball. The amount of times he slipped over, like he had a pair of slippers on, and he still managed to get his toe to the ball.
I think there was one ropey clearance in there where he just wasn't really thinking and it dropped short. He's still got that to his game, but hopefully...
He's still young.
Yeah, absolutely, and that'll get ironed out. So let's mention him. Nick Blackman, man of the hour, cannot stop scoring goals. 8 goals in 8 games, wins a penalty, scores it in very cool and composed fashion. Sort of penalty that if he misses it, you're going to pillar him.
Yeah.
But in the confidence scene, you just knew he was going to miss.
Even when he's off form, he doesn't look like missing the penalty. He has this technique where the keeper moves and he just puts it the other way. Every single time you watch it, no sooner has the keeper made a movement, he's putting the ball in the opposite direction. Nowhere near the corner because he doesn't need to. He just rolls it in. It's a supremely confident way of taking a penalty, and it's going to come unstuck one day.
Well, the keeper won't move, will he? And then before you know it, you're on the ball. And then what are you going to do? You ain't got no power in it then.
Exactly. Has he missed one for Reading? I swear.
No, he hasn't. No, he's never missed a penalty in his life.
There you go.
Well, not in his professional career, shall we say. I can't talk about his life.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that one under eight game that still haunts him to this day.
I don't know if you see this, but if we want a champagne moment for this week, it was when Nick Blackman, a ball ran out for a throw on, and he'd done this outrageous keepy up when he flicked it off the floor. And I thought, it's the new Massar.
Got five more goals in these eight games, I think Massar managed in his entire Reading career.
In his career, I suspect.
So, yeah. And he's, as I said, he's got more goals now in eight games than I think he did in his previous 77 in the league. And so it's just...
And again, I thought he looked a threat. And he's very... When he's on it, Nick Blackburn, he's a very good footballer.
It'd be interesting what Clark decides to do when Vidra is fit. Because as good as Blackburn was again, I think he had a very solid game. This wasn't 8, 9 out of 10 Blackman. This was set very solid 7 out of 10 Blackman. And I thought he was a little bit isolated in the first half out on the right. Is there a risk that you sort of... Do you maybe just push him more centrally because he's in such good form? Or do you have to give Saar and then maybe Vidra that spot?
It's a tricky one.
It's a nice one.
Yeah, it's a nice one to be worried about. But it's difficult to not have him in the side at the moment because, again, his goal scoring record...
At this moment in time, you've got to have him playing on the right-hand side, cutting inside. He's scoring goals from that position. 8 and 8.
He has to play.
Ridiculous. Yeah, he's got to come in. He's got to stay in, sorry. Orlando Saar did okay. Yeah, I think there was too much to report on his first game back.
No, Orlando Saar, he ran around, he made a problem for him, but he didn't really have an effect overall scoring goals.
Not so much, no. It was the Saar that we saw at the start of the season who didn't have, basically didn't have Vidra. With Vidra up alongside him, Orlando Saar just looks a totally different player. We haven't seen a lot of it. Obviously we say the attacking unit looks totally different. There's a completely different dynamic to it.
He was unlucky not to score though when he booted that one into the ground and the mate, he just happened to be in the right time. So we might have had a different conversation about him.
Absolutely. A fantastic result. Just before we move on then, what do you think of Middlesbrough? Because obviously one of the Championship favourites, I think they're still the favourites for the title and for promotion. Did you see the quality?
They've come unstuck against a side that plays pretty much exactly the same as them. I went on their forum earlier today just to see the post-match reaction, and the long and short of it is that they don't have a plan B. And if it's not working, then they struggle. The good thing for them at the moment is that they've got quality and they all tend to win more games than they lose. But if they go behind, like they did on Saturday, 15 seconds, what do they do? So, bit iffy about them, to be perfectly honest with you. They've got a lot of quality, but they really struggled to break us down.
Yeah, I thought they were technically very good. I thought they kept the ball well. They look a big, strong side. I think they'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the season.
And you mentioned at the start, Dave, without Nugent, and obviously they had Bamford last year as well. And every team, mate, you could say Reading without Saar or Vidra. I know they got the result up at Burnley, but you still need that big striker to lead the line, and you know he's going to get you 15, 20 goals. Yeah. And without that, I don't think Kike, the effort he did have, ended up in row Z. Oh dear.
But I think they'll win more games than they lose, that's for definite. And they did look a good side technically. And I just think they come up against a strong Reading side and they just got turned over.
Yeah. And they kept the ball well and probed Reading. And it was credit to Reading's disciplined defence and organisation that they kept them out. And I could see weaker teams getting pulled apart by that. And when teams go behind to that, especially weaker teams, then that's the reason why they rack up the goals.
Yeah.
Because they exploit those spaces. Teams are forced to come on to them and they've just got the quality to get in behind.
Yeah, it's like if they would have scored the first goal, we'd have had trouble getting the ball off them. So they probably turned us over. It's just the first goal was key and we managed to get it.
Absolutely. Well, a few tweets on the game then. Jack Killick says, great result against Middlesbrough. Thought Hector was the star man, very composed and impressive. Along with Hallow, I think deserves a lot of credit. Thought he worked hard and actually produced some quality. I shouldn't be too negative after a win, but really wasn't impressed by Pearson. Can't defend, save his life. Callas got past him way too easily every time and just kept losing the ball. Nonetheless, great win, you ours. David Spencer says, wow, is this team capable of playing better football than the 05-06 team? Potentially, maybe. Calvin says, fantastic win for Reading. To control the match against a team in such form and a clean sheet, a real bonus. Absolutely massive. And Tim Colley says, a statement win today. A performance of that standard against high quality opposition is beyond encouraging.
Just going to that on that last one. That's three now we've had in the last month.
Yeah.
Three statement wins.
Comfortable as well.
pretty much. I wouldn't say Burnley was entirely comfortable.
No, but they started quickly. They got the noses in front, and all right, we might have ended up getting a 2-2 draw, but on this day, we didn't. You know?
And yeah. I joked at the start of the podcast saying I've lumped more money on Reading to win the league. It's because for Reading to be able to do that to Middlesbrough, do that to Ipswich, do that at Burnley, arguably in all of those games with players missing or players just coming into the team.
Yeah.
They've just got such depth and such strength and confidence. I can't see them getting beat.
No, now we've got to continue to do what a lot of Reading sides haven't done in the past, and that's beat the teams at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, we're good at beating teams at the top. It's just, I can't see, I know they will get beat this season, Reading, obviously, but I can't see many teams. If Middlesbrough are one of the best they've got to offer, I can't see them losing too many games.
But it's interesting so far as well. You mentioned that. I was looking at the table on Saturday. And we haven't played many teams in the bottom half.
No. We must have a run
of
that.
If anybody.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Like Bristol City. Yeah. Bristol City we played.
We've played some good sides, and if that's the best we've got to offer, Reading got them in the fear.
We look at, and Brian McDermott, and to a lesser extent, when Brendan Rodgers was talking about, oh, well, our pre-season extended into the season. If you draw that line from deadline day and what they've done after that, basically from the Ipswich game, the only games they failed to win were Derby, when Saar gets sent off just before half time. In a game they didn't look like losing. And Everton, when they're playing a virtual reserve side against Everton's pretty much first string.
15 from 18, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
If you'd have looked at that before, even with the signings that we made, you'd be looking 8-9 points and that would be good. The fact that we've got 15.
Yeah.
You know, I was just looking at the last three games ago, Burnley and Middlesbrough, thinking 3 points would be a good return.
Yeah, I think everyone was. I mean, I was listening to the radio. I think AD Williams said I'd be happy if they won one of them games, and they, well, 4 points would be a bonus, and six, I don't think anyone see that coming. But
just hope we aren't peaking too early.
That's
if we've reached our peak.
I don't think we have. I think there's much more to come from that side. Let's face it, a lot of them haven't played together before.
And I'm usually, as anyone who's listened to the previous 69 episodes of this show will know, I'm never the most optimistic of persons, but as I said, I'm very convinced. Have not been as convinced by a side since, as David mentioned, that 05-06 team. Obviously, they've got a very long way to go to prove they're on that level, but the early signs are certainly encouraging. But anyway, let's move on to just a couple of brief news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Again, not an awful lot of news this week. I said it's very much quiet now, the deadline's over. And
there's one thing you've missed, but we'll go into that in a minute.
Okay, all right.
Leave that one.
Slagging me off on air.
No.
Unbelievable.
Give him a chance, he hasn't even started yet.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's early days.
How do you know I didn't have it in my head and not written down on this expertly laid out show plan?
No, go on. Go ahead.
Anyway. Right. Tarlhurst End Player of the Month Award. Nick Blackman was up against Paul McShane, Oliver Norwood and Stephen Quinn, and understandably, Nick Blackman ran away with it. He took about three quarters of the votes and picks up the award for the second time in a row.
They're always one for a bandwagon, Reading fans, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, if there is any slight cause for concern, it's that in previous seasons we've seen early on Pavel Brebniak winning two or three in a row, and Danny Guthrie also won a couple in a row.
Oh, yes.
Back in there. And Royston Drenthe was also very high up in Player of the Month in August and September a couple of years ago.
The key to this is it doesn't get you Player of the Year, does it? Two or three man of the months don't get you Player of the Year.
How Robson Cannon's still looking forward to the end of the season.
Yeah. Oh, well.
If it ended now, I don't think you'd be in the voting.
There's Christmas, the Christmas award this year for the Hal Robson Canoe Underachieving Reading Player Award.
It's going to be very difficult this year.
It might not be actually Hal Robson Canoe.
He's got three assists since Brentford, hasn't he?
That's what I mean.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be difficult to pick him at the moment.
It was an automatic vote.
Yeah.
Now we might actually have to think for a change.
But like most Reading fans, if he does happen to have a couple of bad games, they'll be the ones that stick in the mind.
Just around Christmas gaming. Yeah. Just in time for award season.
Yeah, award season.
Anyway, so congratulations, Nick. Absolutely fully deserved. He took the club's award as well for the second time in a row. So those tallies matching up well. Gents, any case to make for those other three? Or is it just had to be black?
Well, there is a case to make for those three and many others. And I was just saying off air that it is nice to have an award for a monthly player of the month and have some people to pick from rather than Paul Grebniak for running around and trying hard.
Yeah, exactly that. And so Paul McShane, you mentioned there, I mean, he's an absolute, well, a complete rock at the back of that, in that back line. But the thing is, goals win you games. Nick Blackman's got 8 and 8. And yeah, you know, keep proving us wrong, Nick, please.
Absolutely. I said to win two awards it is great, and thanks for those that voted. The only other news, other than Westie's one that he wants to throw in there, is Steve Clarke was briefly linked with the Sunderland job just before Dick Advocaat announced that he was stepping down. I think he was asked about it in his press-up match after it, and he said, I don't think the wife would be very happy if I moved around the country.
I think he'd have to be mad to take that Sunderland job, because they look like a team that will get relegated.
Yeah, you say that every year, though, and then a new manager comes in and somehow manages to save them.
They can't keep staying up.
They can't do it. It's like Villa. It's about time they went down as well. How long do we give Sherwood?
It won't be long, will it?
Again, he's going off on a tangent.
Yeah, he's a manager with not a proven track record as such.
He's got no bloody goal scorer either.
No, and they've got no one to put the ball
in. Come on, Villa, just go down. Just put your family out of misery.
I'd enjoy a trip to Villa Park, but as we're going up, doesn't look like we'll get one.
No.
So there you go. But yes, if you do fancy a punt, when I looked earlier this morning, the bookies had him between 40 and 50 to 1 to take that job. Behind one Brian McDermott. I presume the former Reading manager rather than the current Leeds Rhinos coach.
Behind who, Brian,
you never know.
God, I'd think there's less chance of Brian McDermott getting a job in the Premier League than me.
Also, wouldn't be right without mentioning another Reading connection to lose his job this week. Brendan Rodgers.
Straight in at Sunderland, what do you reckon?
No.
No?
No.
Did chuckle at that last night. Very, very funny.
It's always...
I'm still looking for somebody to post up the Liverpool version of the bumper booker tactics.
Hey, it worked when you had a world-class player in Suarez.
Yeah.
Didn't work so well afterwards.
Or when you've got the team that's set up absolutely ideally for you at Swansea.
And this is just it. At the moment, Brendan Rodgers' legacy for me is he is a man that can tinker with a good team to get it to achieve results. Because anytime you mention Brendan Rodgers on Twitter, you'll obviously get people that absolutely hate the bloke, can't stand him, and are going to say he's rubbish. And then you'll get the other minority side when it comes to Reading fans anyway. People that think he's great, he's a brilliant world-class coach and everything. From what I have seen, basing it objectively, Watford took an okay team, did all right with it, guided them away from towards the drop zone. Reading had to build a team, clueless, at least in short term.
Yeah.
Liverpool went in, had some world-class players at his disposal, should have won the league, didn't. And then they've slowly fallen away as well because they've not done it. And Swansea obviously came in, picked up on a great team, was on a great run.
Yeah,
and got them over the line.
Exactly that. We're going back to Watford. A lot of the issues they had there, I mean, they appointed Brendan Rodgers straight after sacking A.D. Boothroyd. Rodgers tried to get the squad that Boothroyd had left them playing tippy-tappy, pass it round the back football, and it was never going to work. And apparently, it took Graham Taylor to take Rodgers to one side and say, this isn't going to work, we're going to go down. And funnily enough, after that, they went on a nine wins out of 10 winning spree, including getting, I think it's to the fifth round of the FA Cup. At Reading, he didn't have that. He made exactly the same mistakes. He had a very direct side that Steve Coppell had left him. And he didn't have... Well, he appointed...
Frank Lampard?
Was it Frank Lampard Senior, wasn't
football
it?
Football consultant.
The football consultant who every Saturday was off down Stamford Bridge watching his son play. It just didn't work, did it? And... Where did he end up? 22nd, 21st, something like that. And yeah, he just deserved it. How he ended up in the Swansea job, he must have been
cheap. Well, they plug in managers, don't they? They plug in managers to fit their footballing philosophy.
Well, to be fair, like you said earlier, he took over a side that was already playing the way he wanted them to play.
Yeah. And all he needed to do was to add a goal scorer, and did that in Scott Sinclair.
Yeah,
and in championship terms, and everything's relative in what I've got to say here. In championship terms, Swansea were very much like Liverpool. They had the great goal scorer. Scott Sinclair was a goal scorer, as we saw in the playoff final.
Yeah.
was it 22, 23 goals that season? They had Luis Suarez at Liverpool, and he'd basically played around them. And, ended up finishing second or third or wherever it was.
Are you saying Simon Church wasn't of comparable quality to Scott Sinclair and Luis Suarez?
No, I don't think he is.
Gregor Zraziak, on the other hand.
Yeah.
No, but they say with Rodgers, I mean, I'm sure he's a very good coach, but he has lived a bit of a charmed life so far.
Yeah. I think he's a good coach, and I think if he finds, again, a club with the right fit, he'll do right. But he is not showing to me in any manner that he can build a side. And you can look at this transfer committee and blame it on whatever you like, but I'm just saying
Within which, Reading connection, Barry Hunter, yeah, Liverpool's chief scout.
Is he?
Yeah,
Barry Buzzer. Hunter.
Last time I see Barry Hunter, he's building a wall down Oaktree Road in Tylehurst.
He's gone a long way then.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Old Screech.
Barry Hunter's enduring, obviously, legacy is that.
That wall. I could take you to it. We could do tours.
I was going to say the own goal.
I'm sure there's an enduring legacy on Matthias Svensson's face as well.
I was just going to say the Cardiff own goal with Rouget, but
Do you remember where you were when Reading
yeah, there is an imprint still on Rougier's face as well.
Yeah, definitely. Do you remember where you was when Reading signed Barry Hunter?
I thought you were about to say when Barry Hunter's rule came
Barry
down.
Signed Reading. No. Do you remember where you were?
I was 1996.
I was 10 at the time, so probably in primary school.
I was in Ibiza. Always remember it. It was one. I thought, great, we signed this international footballer. As in the good old days when we didn't sign him very often.
Yeah, we get rid of Andy Williams and sign Barry Hunter.
Next week, where were you when Steve Blatherwick arrived on loan? Stay tuned for that in episode 71, folks.
Well, that would have been March 1997.
Oh, come on. Don't give the game away. It's a tease. Right, anyway, that does wrap up a slightly longer news bites than I thought it was going to be. What was your news?
Yeah, the reaction to Reading's song across the internet.
Yeah, I was going to wait for this in the middle.
Oh, no, do that one
later. Yeah. Don't you worry, that's in this show.
As I say, I'm already cringing.
Yeah, that's in the show, don't you worry. In the meantime, we're going to move on to do a Reading Power Rankings in Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, Pub Chat time. Now, this one is sparked off by two things. One was that I did Reading Power Rankings on the website just before the Middlesbrough game. You can head to the website and check those out. The other thing was Hoops asked a sort of similar question where he said, if you had to call one player indispensable to Clark's side at the moment, which one would it be? And he put in brackets, not Gunter. Obviously, new year appearing this week, Dave.
Clearly. I gave him credit on Saturday.
I did, yeah. I've at least twice now I've heard you give Chris Gunter credit.
I always appreciate good defending.
Credit where credit's due.
I don't appreciate crap defending.
Who does? Who does?
Unfortunately, Gunter has all too often fallen in the
latter. There we go.
Leave it.
Getting a dig in. Right, anyway, power rankings. If you go onto the website, I have ranked the top 10 and the bottom 5, just for you chaps, and anyone who hasn't read it. Number 1, I gave to Nick Blackman. 2, Paul McShane. 3, Orlando Saar. 4, Oliver Norwood. 5, Matej Vidra. 6, Chris Gunter. 7, Gareth McLeary. 8, Stephen Quinn. 9, Jordan Obita. 10, Jonathan Bond. My bottom 5, from lowest to highest, were Simon Cox, Ali Alhabsi, Alex Fernandez, Andrew Taylor, and Dominic Samuel. Now, I'll preface this. A lot of people said, well, how are you ranking this? And for me, it was a bit of a mismatch of everything. It was short-term form, long-term form, long-term prospects, and short-term prospects. Mash all that, and everyone's going to come up with a different formula. So there was no scientific way this was done.
It's basically value to the team,
yeah,
and value to the long-term future of the club.
Exactly. I put it this way. If you were doing a fantasy football draft, and you had to build your Reading team from scratch, just based on the players you had available, which order would you take them in? So that nobody else could get them. So that's why I put Blackman at the top, because I wouldn't want any other Reading team to have Blackman before me.
Ironically, probably last year you'd have put him in the bottom 5.
Absolutely, 100%. And this is just why. Yeah. This is why you can't just say, wow, he's had... But the way he's playing, I couldn't leave him out. So, of those names, who would get into your top 5 in the squad? Who would... I'll say with my top 5, whether you would agree they'd go in there. Would Nick Blackman be in both your top 5s?
Yes. At this moment in time, if we're talking right now, absolutely.
Yeah, at this moment in time, talking right now, it'd be difficult to make a case for him not to be in it.
Paul McShane?
Yep.
Every day of the week, I think he's the most valuable to that team at the moment.
Now, Orlando Saar, possibly overstepping him a little bit high, but I think he's the only player in Reading squad that can do a really good job as the central striker. I know Robson Kanu's kind of done it, and so has Blackman, but for me, he's the only one who's at least proven over a long period of time to be able to do that. Even if it's not at Reading.
Unfortunately, I didn't actually see either Bristol City or Burnley, so I don't know how we played up there without him. I didn't see Everton either. So I've not seen us play without him this season. So that's one I'm going to abstain on.
Okay.
Except for the derby match.
Orlando Saar go in your top 5?
Orlando Saar, I don't know if he'd go in my top 5. I still don't think he's proved enough to me to say he's definitely a valuable member of the he's definitely a member of the squad.
Yep.
But if I had to pick out 11, would he make the top 5? I think we've won games without him, but he's the only player that is a striker that is different to the others. So I might not put him in the top.
Okay, five. Interesting. Oliver Norwood,
water carrier, got to play.
Yeah, at the minute you can't argue against that. Okay. And again, he's still young enough to be an asset in 3 or 4 seasons' time.
And as I said, running out my top 5 was Vidra. Now, a lot of people said, well, Vidra's only played a couple of games. He's not scored or anything. Why is he in your top 5? And I said, because he's a player with at least 15 championship goals in his 2 championship seasons. Both of his teams that he's played in have reached at least a playoff final or got promoted. And he, quality-wise, I think, is the best player at this football club if you take his all-round package.
And you look at the difference that he made to the forward line in the Ipswich game in particular. And it was something else.
Yeah. Would he make your top 5 though?
Based on what I've seen at the moment, again with one game without him. So,
but based on, again, this goes beyond just Reading as well, knowing what you know about his form.
I mean, it depends if you're thinking for the long term future, because he might not be here in the long term future. But as is worth to the team at the moment, I don't know. I think, again, if you're going to pick someone, Hector, I know he's not our player technically anymore, but there's another player that I think worth to the team, just for his age and just how good he is. I think I'd put him
above. If you're thinking five players to get you promoted though this season, is Vidra in that top five?
It's tricky. Like I say, last year it might have been a lot easier because there weren't so many picks, but at the moment there's so many picks.
Do you know who's been completely missed off the list? Because he's been totally forgotten.
Anton Ferdinand. Yeah, well, this was interesting, and this is why Ferdinand and Hector didn't make my list. So it's because they've cancelled each other out. Because both have shown they can play so well that if I didn't have Ferdinand available, I'd be just as happy picking Hector.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have Hector available, I'd be just as happy picking Ferdinand. So for me, that's why they weren't in the top 10.
I'd be happy to pick Cooper.
Well, based on how he played against Everton, apparently, again, I said to say I wasn't there. Yeah, absolutely.
It's very rarely that he doesn't come in and you think he's done a decent job.
And that's exactly the reason why Saar's so high, because if Saar's not available, I'm struggling for who I want to lead the line.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, Jonathan Bond is in at 10 for me. I'm not suggesting that Jonathan Bond's in my top 10 Reading players at the moment, but at least before the Middlesbrough game anyway.
You've got a goalkeeper, haven't you?
Yeah, because Al-Habsi was looking about as useful as a chocolate teapot, whereas Bond was at least looking okay.
Mm.
So for me, he had to be in the top 10 because he was quite important. But okay, let's look at some of those other names. So you're not sure on Vidra and you're not sure on Saar.
Not as a top 5 place, in the 10, well.
The next three were Chris Gunter, Gareth McCleary and Stephen Quinn. Any of them float your top 5 boat?
Stephen Quinn, I think, is a really good footballer. Again, he's probably a little unsung hero in many ways because he does the dirty work. But he's very good on the ball, and he's another one who will give you a shift, and I think you need them.
Top five potential though for you?
Yeah, potentially top five. I think Tish Bowler as well, long term you're looking, I think he looks like he's going to be a very good footballer.
I think the fullbacks, Chris Gunter and Jordan Obita, you can't overlook those for top five based on the fact that they're part of such a successful defensive unit.
Yeah,
they all complement each other extremely well. You know, Obita in particular this season has, you know, his form is steadily increasing. You know, he's very, he's come on. You know, and Andrew Taylor has given the kick up the backside that he needed, and he's looked, you know, nothing's got past him so far this season.
No, he hasn't. And I think if you look at the whole back four as a whole, they all've got different attributes that make it a good back four.
Yeah. Okay, then before we move on to the bottom five, then decision time. So who makes your top five then? We've said there's three unanimous picks there in McShane, Blackman and Oliver Norwood. As I said, I'll stick with my own power rankings and keep Vidra and Lando Saar in there. But for you two, who are the other two that make your top five then?
Oh, it's still hard to even think about now.
I think Danny Williams hasn't even mentioned.
Yeah, Williams I like. Hector I like.
You can only pick two more. Right, so, Hector. You've said you're going to have Hector as one?
Hector, McShane, Norwood, Blackman.
That's four. One more.
And I'm going to go Williams.
Danny Williams. Dave, who are your other two to go alongside? McShane, Norwood and Blackman.
I'm going to throw the old curveball in there, and I'm thinking Hal Robson-Cano.
Get out.
At this moment in time, bear in mind, as I said earlier, he's got three assists in five or six games. He hasn't looked like he's going to score too many, but he's been a different quality of player since the end of the transfer window. It's one of those difficult. It's really difficult.
I'm not having a Robson Canoe in over Vidra. I'm sorry. I know he's been good.
Yeah, he's not been that good.
Okay, I'm going to have to hurry you because we've got to move on. We've got big mailbag.
We've spoken Jordan Obita. I'm going to go Jordan Obita.
Yeah.
So Williams.
That is absolutely fine. Right. Now we've got the positivity out of the way.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the least valuable. And I've got to be completely honest, this was very, very hard list to do. I think one of the names here stands out. It is Simon Cox.
Yeah, of course.
Simon Cox just can't get anyone in the team. And you've got to say he's probably, sixth, seventh choice at the moment in the attacking unit.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't a list of who I think are awful players. It's in the context of Reading's squad, who do I want? And at the moment, if you ask me to leave out any senior player, it's Cox.
Yeah, that's it. I think the question is, who would you not miss, yeah, basically?
Exactly that. I did have Ali Alhabsi in there because up until the Middlesbrough game, he looks liability. And I need to see more than one game. And I'll stick with him in my bottom three. And the other one I put in, because this was very hard, was Alex Fernandez. Because he's come in with a fairly decent reputation from Espanyol, obviously formerly on the books at Real Madrid. I don't think he's come over here to be a bench warmer. Definitely. But at the moment, he's not even a bench warmer. He's a squad warmer, a corporate seat warmer.
Yeah, again, I'm sure he was promised.
A West Stand warmer.
First team football when he came over here, but yeah, he can't get nowhere near it at the moment.
And he's fallen behind a 20-year-old in Aaron Tischbowler.
Yeah, but again, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Different
because
type of player.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, but in the general pecking order of midfielders, they turn to Tischbowler ahead of Fernandes.
It's because we're winning so many games.
Yeah,
very true.
And also, he is the future of the club, isn't he? Because next year he could well be starting.
But any other names there? As I said, I left out some of the real fringe players, because I don't think it's very fair to pick on Shane Griffin or Novakovic, people like that.
Yeah, of
but of these senior established players, I mean, I put Andrew Taylor and Dom Samuel in there. Dom Samuel, I put simply because he's seen a good chance to get in the side. If he had stayed fit in those first three or four games and put in some good performances,
yeah,
he would have been right in the mix. But unfortunately,
very, very unlucky at Colchester.
Massively unlucky. But unfortunately, that does put him in a poor position because he is so far down the pecking order. So
yeah, it's difficult to argue with that one because even when he looks like he might get a chance, he doesn't end up getting a chance. Yeah.
So any other names you'd put ahead of Alhabsi, Cox and Fernandes?
Well, it's how Ross and Canning fit into this.
Can't be in both lists.
No. Anyone else?
No, it's difficult to argue with any of them. I think everyone else has been playing very well. Taylor, again, it's a bit harsh.
Hurtado, maybe?
Would we miss him? I haven't seen enough of him to know if he's in a good
one. Game.
Yeah. So, no, you wouldn't miss him if he wasn't there, I don't think. Not that he might.
Could be a candidate for that group. And again, it is going to be a challenge for Steve Clarke as the weeks wear on and these players aren't playing every week.
Yeah.
He's going to have to try and keep them happy.
If he hasn't continued to put in performance like he did the other week, I don't think we'd be too worried about not seeing him either.
Well, anyway, that's how we see it, but please let us know. You see, I said you can go on to the Tullhurst End and look at my power rankings in full and the reasonings I've given for each player. I said it was written before the Middlesbrough game, so take that into account, but you can head over there or you can get in touch with us via all the usual channels, which I'll recap as we head into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tullhurst End
and facebook.com/thetullhurstend.
Right, so as you've just heard, plenty of ways to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us via email to thetullhurstend@gmail.com. It's facebook.com/thetullhurstend. And the Twitter is @thetullhurstend. And if you use the hashtag TTE podcast, you've got a damn good chance of making it onto my little sheet here and I won't miss you. Anyway, we'll start with someone who's emailed in. That is Hugh, who says, "Hi guys, big fan of the show each week. With a former rules manager getting the sack, who liked to talk about character? Who have your favourite characters / personalities at the club been and who currently? Personally, I liked Harper, Kebe and Hanneman for the personalities they brought to the pitch." Well, thank you very much for the kind words at the top, Hugh. Gents, nice personalities?
That is
personalities at the club?
Great question. Really good question that I'm going to crack on with.
What's going to dodge?
I supported Reading since 1989. And you go back to the characters of the from that period, sort of mid to late 90s, early part of the millennium. And since then, as we've progressed, the players seem to have just, particularly this last 4 or 5 years, seem to have just progressed into sort of clones of each other. They're very distant from supporters. And I think they struggle to, because of that distance, they struggle to portray their own character. Now, obviously, we've had some interesting ones recently in the likes of sort of Jem Karachan, for example.
Royston.
Royston Drenthe is a interesting character.
Noel Hunt was a bit of a character.
Yes, yeah, very personable as well. I spoke to him on a number of occasions. But with characters that I remember, you know, go back, people like Michael Jilks, absolute gent of a man, real gent of a man. Dylan Kerr, who was more than happy to interact with absolutely anybody on any kind of social media. He's out in Africa managing at the moment.
He still does as well.
Yeah. Former guest on, was it the Rules Post or Fancast?
Well, no, he's the Rules Post, and I've done an hour with him in South Africa. He was amazing.
Yeah, so he's a proper character. In fact, he would actually take time, literally a couple of seconds out, and engage in banter with the South Bank in the middle of games. He was such a really, really highly regarded character at Reading. Players like that, even Jimmy Quinn had his own character. Mickey Gooding, you know, moving forward a little bit, you know, I spoke to Paul Holsgrove, who's an incredibly funny man, I thought. Not a particularly great footballer in the later stages, but you know,
when he played sweeper, he was awesome.
Unfortunately, he didn't play sweeper very often.
Sweeping up the tile last day.
Glenn Little, he was always
Blakey.
I'd say there's a good little story about Glenn Little. We coming back from Nottingham Forest just after we beat Liverpool. Actually, we played Forest away. We lost 2-1, and
kind of Torvaldsen's. Only Reading star, I think. Or did he come off the bench?
Might have come off the bench a couple of times.
Nearly scored as well.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, we've picked up a train. We've got the train back Forest Nottingham to Derby. Picked up the train at Derby. Who was on the in first class on the cross-country train coming back? One Glenn Little. So Neil Maskell and I decided we were just going to jump in, pay our £10 upgrade and sit with Glenn Little. And do you know what? We were just spoken at for 2.5 hours from Derby back to Reading. Couldn't get a word in edgeways.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a very good way. Yeah, very, very enlightening stories he had. Hmm. He was one. Bobby Convey, Marcus Hanneman have been mentioned.
It's very difficult in this day and age for players to show their personality, because the minute they... It's all great when it's all going well, but the minute they say something bad, social media jumps all over them. So they are taught...
They can't by have the media, an opinion.
Yeah, by the media department, look, it's better if you just don't say anything at all.
Unless you're Dave Kitson, who didn't bother with that and just done what he wanted.
Dave Kitson keeps it a secret.
But this is just it. You know, if you get a player, you have a conversation in a one-to-one where they know they're not being recorded, just get them off guard a little bit. You know, you can have, and you know, Glenn Little was exactly a prime case in point, was they will generally talk.
And I do think, you know, I say we the media because, you know, I think of us as part of the media. You know, we're not established media, but we're, you know, we're fan-driven media. We've got a responsibility to show clubs going forward that we're responsible. And I like to think whenever we've done interviews, be it with former players, we've done it with current players, we interviewed people like Aaron Call over the summer, and nothing bad has happened. And I think sometimes clubs need to be able to let players express themselves. Yeah, there might be the odd negative opinion, but if you've got 200 really positive opinions and two or three people that don't like it, I think it's a gamble worth taking to forge those relationships.
I think so, absolutely. I think you've also got, I mean, if you were talking sort of national or local press, then they're looking for a story, they're looking for something, they're going to interpret words.
Hmm.
Whereas, you know, this particular website, taking it at face value, and it's been approached the right way. I mean, obviously, we had Simon Shepherd a few weeks ago.
Yep.
Didn't have the greatest time. He was very often booed, you know, from the South Bank, or ironically or sarcastically applauded and cheered when he managed to. But you know, the issues that he had were dealt with sensitivity, because players ultimately they want to do well. They don't. You know, they want to be liked. If you deal with these things with sensitivity, then you're going to get some very well constructed answers.
Absolutely. Westy, any personalities stand out for you?
No.
Other than the ones we mentioned?
I remember years ago, you guys probably remember Paul Franklin. I remember walking up the road. It was in the old days when you used to go to matches with the players, and we had a network Southeast day, and it was on the trains. And the first team went up with the fans on their own designated train. But we had to walk from Wolverhampton Station to the ground all together under police escort. And we walked all the way up, me and my dad with Paul Franklin.
Huh? What is that then?
I don't know. I think there was more of a squad than there was of the fans that
or
day.
Or were they keeping you away from the Wolverhampton fans? Because you've got fearsome reputation.
Yeah, your reputation
was hardcore reputation with us 6 years off. But no, like I say, it was much more personal then. But I think in general... probably the best over the last couple of years has been Glenn Little, because he was always quite good for a laugh.
There's a lot.
Andy Hughes was a good one as well.
Yeah. Murty was both good as well. Yeah.
The more, and again, it's not just money, but the more players earn and the more they sort of are distanced from the average fan, the less they can relate, I suppose.
I think
and fans can relate to them.
I think the players we're talking about, your Glenn Littles, your Murtys, they sort of done it the hard way. You know, they did come up through the ranks and they probably weren't on great money when they started. Whereas the younger players, they are trained, media trained, and they know that they can't say, they can't go out drinking, they can't do all the stuff that the players did back in the 90s and the 80s. Like, you'd be in a pub and people would walk in. I remember Massard, Darren Caskey being in one of the pubs in town.
I'd like to think if you were out having a few drinks with Hal Robson Canoe, that it'd be a pretty nice bloke and you'd get on really well with him and he'd be able to entertain you.
I'll tell you what, he wasn't a nice bloke when we bumped into him in town. Leroy Leiter. Horrible.
I've not heard, and again, I can only go on what I've heard, I've not heard very good stories about Leroy Leiter.
He's a character.
A character.
He was a character.
Do you know what? He was an arrogant so-and-so.
That was evident on the pitch.
Again, this is another little story. We were back in the 2005-06 season. I had a second job at Lakeside Super Bowl in Thatcham, and he rocked in, you know, he parked up outside with his, you know, big black blacked out window Hummer. He walks in as if he owns a flipping place.
For free.
And you know, I went up to him, you know, just, you know, he'd settled in, started his bowling, he had two games of bowling, and, you know, walked up to him halfway through his first game and said, Leroy, would you just mind sort of signing this autograph? And it was on sort of headed Lakeside Super Bowl paper, because, you know, that's expensive stuff. And, you know, he signed it, but do you know what? The manner in which he just turned, as soon as he'd signed it, and he sort of picked up the scrap of paper, you know, folded it kind of thing, and then just handed, just turned his back, threw his pen over the shoulder to me, and just like, yeah, you know, your time's done with me now.
Yeah, so not the most well-liked of players. But anyway, we spent a good 6-7 minutes on that one question, so better rattle through some more.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me what names come up on this podcast. I was having a conversation with someone I know who listens to the show regularly, and he said, some of the names come up. Carlos Arby, he didn't see that one coming last week.
I like to think Gunnar Torvaldsen has thrown a few people
today. I'm surprised. I don't think even he thought he'd get a mention on a radio podcast 5 years after he played for us.
I think one day we need to get a little challenge of getting as many Tommy Burns loanies that we can get into one podcast.
Yeah.
There we go. Maybe we'll do it. Yeah, I'll tell you what, we will do it and see if anyone notices.
Maybe that's something we'll do at a later date.
Oh dear.
Anyway, moves to on. Tim Redman. He said, Fernand, Blackman, Gunter, Cooper or Clark? Who's the first person you focus on sort out a contract extension? There you go. Five names there. Who's the most important one to start to a new deal?
Clark.
Oh yeah, definitely manager. Then Blackman. Fernand, I don't think too many have come banging on your door with his injury record.
Gunter. It's an interesting question because they've all got the merits.
Wow, this is...
We're getting some really good questions
this
week,
guys. The thing is, apart from...
Too many good questions.
Apart from Ferdinand, the rest of them have got huge resale value.
Yeah.
Raw Hoops with another one. He says, Michael Hector is too good for the championship. Danny Williams is improving because of Tish Bowler competition.
No, Danny Williams is not improving because of the competition. He's improving because he's in a better side than he was last
year. I also think because he's fit.
Yeah, he's fit and he's in a better team.
Yep. Ollie Allen, would you have Dom Samuel involved when he's back fit or send him out on loan? Dave?
Send him out on loan and get some fitness. Send him out to League Two or lower end championship.
Yeah, he could do with at least a month somewhere else, six games.
You want to see him playing regularly.
Get him up to speed.
His most regular spell of football, I think, was 12 games at Coventry. And obviously then he got injured again.
Yeah, I think he'd struggle if he'd come back now, not having much time.
Though, is, you know, you can say
Very, it's just unfortunate that it's happening.
Yeah, it's not a soft tissue injury. If his hamstring keeps going, then fine.
He's had one at Dagenham. He's had one at Coventry, and he's had one now at Reading. So, again, absolutely unlucky, but unfortunately they have happened. So he needs games. He needs regular games, see what he can do. And we were saying on the podcast actually with Charles, apparently Coventry are very keen on getting him back. So hopefully, when he does get fit, he can go there. Next one from Pervy Wink. For the podcast question, how successful have our release players been? Well, as it's a factual question rather than an opinion for once, well, there is a bit of opinion to it, I suppose. Stephen Kelly, Westy, you'll be surprised to hear he hasn't got a club yet.
I'm surprised he's ever a professional footballer.
Apparently he was training with Huddersfield recently.
And they got rid of him.
Cem Karacan has played a grand total of 17 minutes in the league for Galatasaray.
17 minutes more than I've played for Galatasaray.
Yeah, that is...
That's how we're measuring success.
If you are the measuring stick, yeah, that is fair. Adam Federici has played 2 League Cup games for Bournemouth, although he was a penalty shootout hero in the last one. Alex Pearce has managed 1 League Cup appearance for Derby, where they got beat by League 2 Portsmouth.
Alex Pearce is in danger of slipping down the leagues.
He did score for the under-21s this week, and they did praise him for his attitude. But yeah, very, very... heights he was at after winning Player of the Year here.
That's kind of a backhanded compliment, isn't it? Like, well done for trying out. Now you're in the under-21s.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, but... Anyway, Danny Guthrie's played 9 games for Blackburn, and unsurprisingly is now injured. Zat Knight has shockingly failed to find a club. Yakubu is at Kayserspor, where he's played 4 games.
I think Yakubu was recently, they tried to sign him for that. I don't know if you've seen the advert for the walk-in football for the over 75s. I think they tried to sign him, but couldn't find his birth certificate.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable accusations. Mikael Andersen is a regular starter for Midtjylland in Denmark. They knocked Southampton out of the Europa League. He started on the bench and he's worked his way into the team. So, well done, Mikael. And Juraj Travner is playing regularly back in Slovenia. So out of all those...
It's not looking too good for anyone.
Out of all of those...
Hope Akpan's playing for Blackburn.
Yeah. He was free. I didn't include him because he was a sort of a free transfer when the season started. But I suppose, yeah, he's done okay.
Released. Yeah, all right. Yeah,
Out of all those, shockingly, it's Danny Guthrie or Mikael Andersen, I think.
The thing with Guthrie, regardless of his attitude and his haircuts and everything that goes around him, he's still an all right player.
He is. If he's fit all season, then he's still a good player.
He's just got a bad attitude and an iffy fitness record.
And a crap haircut.
And a poor haircut, yes. So hope that answers that one for you. Matt Castle says, and this is, again, we've come on to the song now.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
We've come on to the song. He says, do you think that Lady Sassaman knew the song would go viral? All of a sudden, the Reading name is out there and people from all over are supporting the club, not to mention the huge popularity in Thailand.
It's crap.
It's pretty bad.
Rubbish.
Actually,
it's gone viral for all the wrong reasons. It's because it's a friggin' embarrassment.
Mm. Tell us how you really feel, Dave. Yes.
Don't hold back there. I would say that this is one of the cases where any publicity is good publicity.
Agreed.
Because the song looks like it sounds like it's been written by somebody from Thailand about Reading, rather than someone from Reading writing about it.
What is it? Our blood is blue, our wings are white?
Something like that. And we carry the name of our kings or something like that. I thought,
yeah. Listen.
Kings of our land.
I'm not going to say that this is something that I'm very going to proudly put lyrics on the back of my shirt. Raw Hoops wrote a very good article on the website. You can read it at thetalisman.com, where he basically put forward the case and one I agree with. But look, if this is what the Thai owners want to do in exchange for giving us lots of money and helping rebuild our football club, I'm happy with it. They're not changing the colours. They're not selling off. They're not asset stripping.
Could they not spend the time spent on actually writing this song, making more money to put into the football club?
It was a gift from Lady Sassaman to the football club.
Yeah, it's a gift, man. And like I say, you should be more grateful.
Look, as long as we don't have to hear it at Wembley if we make a playoff final.
The thought that counts.
No, this is the problem, though. If we make a playoff final, it will be played.
Anyway, I think, did they know the song would go viral? Probably. It's a bit of fun. And the one bit of credit I'll give the club is they're not ramming it down our throats. It's not like they're playing it three times a game. They very quietly play it at half time, and that's about it.
I think that someone up who puts the records on is thinking, let's leave it as it is.
And on that note,
this is DJ Mega Party.
Our final question is from David Spencer, who says, can we please discuss the announcer and whether Reading FC should hire a pro?
Apparently he is a pro. He is a pro, apparently.
They have hired a pro.
He's an agency guy. He's got a 1-year contract.
I like him. I'll tell you what, he's enthusiastic.
Just leave my house now if you're giving that sort of praise.
He gives everything he's got. I'll give him that.
He gives everything he's got and more. It's not the more we want. A five-year-old
could give everything he's got.
Look, if you're churning out songs like we're churning out, DJ Mega Party fits the bill as far as I'm concerned.
Seriously. If I wanted to listen to DJ Mega Party announcing the flipping team like it's the blinking top 40 in the charts, and I'd listen to the top 40 in the charts.
I can imagine that in a past life, DJ Mega Party was DJing at Mega Bowl in Calcutta on a Friday night.
He may well have done. If you are out there DJing your party, I'm looking for a DJ around May time.
For a mega party. Look, I am not going to waste any more time on this bloke. I don't like him. A lot of people don't like him. The club obviously do, and he's going to be here a while. He's not going to change his ways because he's obviously heard all this criticism and he's made zero attempt to change.
Good.
He's just going to stick with it. I don't like him. I cringe every time I hear him, but What more can you
could
do?
Always get into the ground a little bit late and you won't have to listen so much.
I could.
Stick yourselves in the jazz until 2 minutes before kickoff and just rock
it. Yeah, no, you wait, it'll start being there soon.
I don't need him to read out the team, I've got Twitter.
Yeah, very true.
I reckon I should pipe it into the jazz cafe so you can hear
just to annoy handbags. Excellent. On that note, we'll move on to any other business where we'll preview the Charlton game.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, chaps, any other business? Last bit of business for 2 weeks, and we can go and think about what we've done on this show.
Well,
think about how we can improve.
Well, it's stuff that won't come out. Let's put it that way.
We start our campaign to get in that podcast category at the Football Blogging Awards now.
Hmm.
Anyway, any other business? The next game is Charlton at the Badeski. As mentioned, there are internationals for the next couple of weeks, so we get to see a couple of pointless England qualifiers. But we do get to see whether Hal Robson and Chris Gunter can lead Wales to Euro 2016 and Oliver Norwood with Northern Ireland. So best of luck to all them.
Might get to listen to the Hal Robson Carney song again for 20 minutes however long they had it on last time.
Yeah. I'm sure if they'll make it, he'll go down in folklore.
Yeah. 10 mark in Bale and Robson Carney having a good game.
There you go.
Coincidence?
The next game is Charlton. Now, we were mentioning earlier that Reading play a lot of very difficult sides. Obviously, we've had the likes of Ipswich, Burnley, Derby, Middlesbrough in recent weeks. We go into a little bit of a period of easier games with Charlton and Rotherham. I say easier, but...
Oh, no easy games in the Championship.
I was about to say. Cliche, but there aren't. But anyway, if there was an easier game to pick out, you would probably want to play Charlton at the moment because they're without a win in six in a spell where they've drawn twice and lost four times. They've only got two wins all season. But those two wins did come against both QPR and Derby. So they've shown they're dangerous. They obviously came to the Wadeski and did a job on us last year and then beat us at the Valley later in the season as well. No Simon Church, though, in their squad now. But Dave, having a look at this team, and we were chatting a little bit before we went on air, it's a very... I don't recognise half this team.
Johnny Jackson you've got there. You've got... is it Joey Goodmanson, number seven?
Yeah.
Tony Watt. I want to say that's...
Who scored a goal...
I want to say that's Jason Cousins, but it's not Jason Cousins at all. Because
he played for Wickham in the 90s,
yeah,
didn't he?
Exactly. So he'll be about 50 years old in the Charlton midfield.
Tony Watt has scored the goal that beat Barcelona. There you go.
Oh, wow.
For Celtic in that 2-1 win, didn't he?
Great. No, I sort of misread that when I was reading it earlier. Anyway, moving on.
But yeah, not a lot of names on this list that I know. It is a team that is...
That makes it dangerous.
Yeah.
Unknown quantity.
Disappointed Andrew Beakey isn't in this team anymore.
I thought he was good last year when he played for him as well, didn't he?
I thought him and Ben Ayim had a great game.
They liked him as well. They really liked him. I went to Fulham v Charlton. All right, they lost 3-0, which probably wasn't a great reflection on BK or Tel Benheim. But every time he got the ball... well, I won't say they went nuts, but they sort of chanted his name and went beast every single time.
Yeah, I thought he was good when he played down there last year. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah,
they've got one M. Sarr on the bench.
Yeah, I've just noticed that. Yeah.
So hopefully he's reinvented himself as a 22-year-old defender.
Yeah, instead of a 22-stone midfielder.
But yeah, like you said, Dave, they are a dangerous outfit. They haven't won in six, but they have beaten some good teams this year. And the danger, I suppose, for Reading is now that they've, you know, have this 2-week break, they go away for international duty and come back. A, maybe a few tired legs from key players, and B, you got to hope that the complacency doesn't set in as well. Because
didn't seem to show me too many tired legs on the Friday night against Ipswich, did we?
No.
And again, the strength of the bench we've got, I don't think tired legs is a problem.
And fans are going to have a role to play as well, because fans are going to start turning up now, thinking we need to blow these sort of teams away. And if Reading don't get a goal in the first 30, 40 minutes, and maybe Nick Blackburn or Harry Robson Canoe's having a bad game for once, they've got to show got to show their patience.
I think, yeah, they have got a role to play, but I also think fans are intelligent enough to understand that you're not going to go 1-0 up or 2-0 up in the first 10 minutes every game. Theoretically, looking at the results we've got, you'd think this would be a comfortable win. But, you know, saying they're an unknown quantity. I mean, Clark will do his homework, as he always does. He always seems to... set up correctly, or certainly has done this season, set up correctly against sides. And so, you know, you've got to be looking at this one and thinking this has got to be 3 points.
Absolutely. Well, prediction league-wise, we go into the international break with a situation of Charles Watts and Johnny Williams on top of the league. They've got 9 points from the game so far. Westy, you picked up a point.
Yeah, it's about time.
Your second point of the season. You correctly predicted Reading would win, although you said 3-1. Charles predicted a 2-1 win for Reading. So just missing out as well. Me and Johnny both went for draws, and so missed out. I'm in third at the moment on sixth. I'm just staying under the radar, you know, defending champion. Yeah. Like Chelsea, I've had a bit of an inconsistent start.
Plenty of time.
I'm being punished for being the voice of pessimism, because I'm always trying to balance out your positivity. So
yeah.
But anyway, so I'm going to go first this week.
Go.
And predictably give us the kiss of death. I'm going to say Reading are going to win this 3-0. Bold early doors. So, Westy?
I'm going 6.
6?
We are going to smash them.
Wow.
6-0.
6-0. You heard it here first, folks.
Get your money on it.
Dave, honorary prediction from you?
Honorary prediction, I was going to go 3-0 as well. Although, also off-air.
Like you're thinking.
Off-air, we did also say, stick me in now and I'll still beat you. Get my prediction every week.
I reckon we should let him have a go.
Okay. All right.
If not, I'll buy the beers. First round.
Okay, I'll let you in from now.
If you don't finish bottom, or if you don't win it.
If I don't win it.
Well, ooh. Actually, if you managed to get the correct score on Saturday, and Westy didn't, you'd go above Westy right now.
I did also predict...
it's a fair
point. Let's just also mention, and I did mention this off air, and I did tweet it in as well, and it still didn't get a mention, that I did have an absolutely spot-on result against Bristol City. I think you should put the points in for that.
You did. The tweet went up at, what, 5-0?
You're as bad as Charles when he says that all cup games should count. Listen, I'm the boss here. I run this game.
Yeah, exactly who they think they are. Coming in muscle.
I've got to win every year. I've got to bend the rules to suit me.
Exactly.
quite clearly. Anyway, that just does just about wrap up the show. Again, I'd just like to plug the Football Blogging Award nomination. Again, big thank you to those of you who got us to this stage, but we need your help to win. We're going all the way up to Manchester and we want to bring that award back. And if we bring that award back, we will do something for the listeners. I don't know what, but something.
Gloat?
Maybe we'll record like a rendition of the Reading song or something.
What
like
we do, we go bowling and we write autographs and then chuck pens at people.
In a loutish accent.
Can't do that at Mega Bowl anymore then.
No.
It's IKEA now.
Nearly. Half built IKEA.
Yeah. Lack of bowling facilities at Reading. Maybe we need to address these key issues.
I think now.
There's always Bracknell.
Yeah, it's miles away.
It's too far.
It's too far.
Fashion's a bit too far to go to recreate that, isn't it? Although that's where it was.
And where have all our laser quests gone? Two key questions.
Yeah.
We need to ask.
Why did that ever fade away?
I loved Laser Quest.
Didn't we all?
I think anyone was. Nearest one's Oxford now, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just make teeth really yellow. Now they are just permanently yellow.
What, Laser Quest? Laser Quest made your teeth yellow?
Yeah, because when did the white come on, they also go funny colours.
Interesting. Mm. Didn't do that to me. I thought that was...
No,
that's sure. That's a guy with a professional gum shield.
Professional joke of a gum shield.
And on that very note, it is time for us to leave you. I will be back with Charles just before the Charlton game, and then we'll get back together after that, and just before the Rotherham game, hopefully. I said no show next week, because as much as I want to talk about Wales... I don't.
No, I don't think anyone wants to talk about Wales, particularly even the Welsh. This is rugby, of course.
Harsh. Going to get a deluge of our Welsh listeners. Will, who works, he's one of our assistant editors. He's straight on to you now.
I'm really scared.
Bring it on. Oof. Oh, here you go. Challenge.
He's already had a visual slap from me.
There you go. Yeah. Welsh heritage.
It's not about Dave being Welsh, yeah. Actually, I've got a bit worse.
Anyway, we're off to have a rock in a car park. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, come on, you arse. It's funny how the crows always leave a trail. Funny how the crows always leave a trail. Funny how they always leave a trail. You smile. Funny how the crows always leave a trail. People when it seems there's no trail. Funny how the crows always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.